I can't see the connection between anything that they are doing there with the electron microscopes and determining the age of the original scratch. I mean,
no fingers. Now, determined just because the man Barrett is an arrogant liar. But having said he was a merchant seaman, and he talks about a compass with fingers, no deck officer, no deck employee, helmsman would ever talk about a compass with fingers. They talk about the compass rose, a floating compass rose. They talk about the needle. This is a fact.
One needle. Not fingers.
And this is the pretty fact. So when I discussed this with him, he said, you know nothing about compasses. This was a bone compass. Now, the one place you don't place a compass is in an area where there's going to be movement of armed masses around it. Now, every goddamn boat that's ever been built since the days of the Vikings their anchors in the front and at the stern. Now, the front of a boat is described as a bow. So, naturally, for the bow. Now, the point is this. You don't put a compass up there because every time you put the anchor chains down and bring them up again, the bloody compass would be shot. It is simple as that. The man lies. What I'm getting at is why does he describe this compass as being in a brass box? And why is it the man who came across now married to that woman who's written the book talk about I've got an Omega chronometer in a brass box? And Omega's never made a bloody chronometer for a ship, and they never, never put one in a brass box.
He says that he has no key to the box.
That's right.
He asked me if I could make him a key. The box was closed.
No, it must have been open. But he would have loved to have the key. I don't know. I don't give a damn whether the box will be open or not. But every goddamn chronometer and every goddamn compass I've ever seen. And don't forget, I was also a board surveyor for many years. I was also an Oscar Baird's surveyor during the same time on shipping. The only time I've ever seen a compass transported from and onto a boat is in a wooden blizzard box. And the only time I've ever seen a ship's compass, it has always been housed in a hard wooden box. Suitably suspended.
That's what I would understand too, because I don't see why it...
They lie. They lie. Both of them are lying. But there's a common tie between these two. A bloody brass box.
Obviously it's open. Or that the lock doesn't work. Or something like that.
I don't believe for one moment this man, Duncan, is his Christian name, now married to Shirley House. I do not believe he has an Omega chronometer. They don't take them. And they don't put them in brass boxes. But how is it he triggered in his brain about a brass box when over 200 miles ago a man was purchasing a box containing a photo album which was subsequently used, as he says, so that he could write the diary, included a brass box containing a compass. I don't believe this bloody bullshit. This woman lies. And it is higher to the top.
The only thing that you can
is the effect? You can read it over and over again. Also, you will do those tests on it, please. What other resources are there now?
Yes, but what do we want to prove?
All I want to do is to show that with a simple copper plate, with a simple silver plate, and with a simple gold plate,
recording with Michael Barnes in his home, and the tape recorder wasn't working correctly. Now it's 12:55 p.m. and it's Monday the 30th of September 1996, and I'm sitting in the home of Michael Barnes at 30A Wennington Road, Southport, and in company with us is his good lady Jackie, and we're now discussing the matter of my client, Mr. Stanley Dangar, who I represent here, has given me certain instructions to put to Mr. Barrett about the prospects of his biography and future outlook. Now, Michael, I know we've just talked this over,
so we're going on over
Before you start, Mike, I just explained that I've explained to you about getting good corroborative evidence over all this matter. You know, Mr. Dangar's prepared to put money up front, and a contract needs to be signed and sealed, and the Americans have started, I understand, I was informed this morning by Mr. Dangar, has saved Michael Barrett from, because a lot of people feel for you in all this, and a lot of people believe that you're telling the truth, as in fact Dangar.
But nobody believes me.
There's a lot of people starting to believe you, because there's lots of bits and pieces of all this falling to pieces, and more people are turning and saying, well, what Michael Barrett told us, it does appear to be the truth. Stanley Dangar read your statement and said you are telling the truth. This is a phony.
Right, so we're going to get started. First of all, Mr. Dangar, good afternoon. Now, I'll just play to Alan. I'm not going to go into all the fact that the last 4 years, excuse me saying it, his best place to describe it has been shit. He took all my money, particularly my ex-wife, and particularly Shirley Harris, and they've left me virtually penniless. Now, it's ridiculous, considering I wrote the damn bloody thing. It stitched me up, left, right, and centre, and I have been admitting it's a hoax, but God knows how long. In fact, I've given up, virtually. The last time was only 5 weeks ago when I was in court for access with my daughter, Caroline, and I stood in front of the judge and I said, the diary's a forgery, I wrote it, the diary's in my wife's handwriting, and my own daughter was a witness. Now, having said that, still nobody believes me. Oh, and you, the only person who knows this diary other than myself, which is Anne, but she doesn't know everything. She doesn't know everything. But this diary is myself. Now, you want proof, I can give you one hell of a lot of proof. Don't forget, I'm the person who wrote it. But I'm not going to give it unless we have a contract. We have to say we've talked. £4,000 up front, which I obviously give Mr. Alan Gray all the evidence to start off with once I've got a signed contract. I'm not trying to be offensive, but I'm not going to be stitched up a second time round. I emphasise that word, stitched up. That is a plain deal, and I'm talking as a businessman. Right. I'll give you what you want, but I might get the contract and give you the autobiography. And by God, it will be a fascinating book. But for starters and for openers, some of the things I can tell you, nobody's ever fathomed, and we were laughing before when they done it, and I still laugh over it, nobody's fathomed out, and nobody ever will fathom out how the hell I've done the ink. But it was so easy, it was untrue. And when you find out, you have a bloody good laugh over it. You really will. Remember, no matter what material, material has molecules. And molecules can be made to be mixed. Won't say how, but it's so simple. It is so simple. So let me write that one out. Let's see if you can beat me to it. But there's a starter. Now, as a result of Chance Warren Gray, over the years, I have been a professional writer. This can be collaborated by a chap called David Burness in Scotland, Dundee. I believe he's working on the Sunday paper there, the Sunday Post, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if he's the editor or if he's just working as a journalist now. But when I was working for Warren, he was the editor of Celebrity Magazine. Now, if you can get any copies of Celebrity Magazine, through the DC Thompson Company, Dundee office, or contact Mr. David Burness. This just shows you how far I've been writing. Over the years, I've interviewed many, many big stars. I'm talking about, and I'm going back years when they were in the limelight, Bonnie Langford, Bernard Manning, Stan Boardman. I've even done articles on clairvoyance, Dorothy Wright. She was a big clairvoyance in Liverpool, well known fact. I've done a 2-page article on her, hit the headline, hit the front pages quite a few times. Exclusives, Nick Miller. Exclusive on there, Stan Boardman. In fact, I visited that now, all the Brookside, I'm going back years ago, for Simon O'Brien when they were all there. Phil Redman, done a big article for him, I've done that for Chat Magazine. Oh, I used to work for Chat Magazine as well. Then I've done an awful lot of work. Oh, after Celebrity, like some magazines go to work out, Celebrity folded. That was only after a period of 18 months. Well, after 18 months, I was one of their writers, their main writers. Freelance, by the way, I wasn't employed by them, but I was getting work accepted week in and week out by them. And I was getting paid reasonable money for them. So therefore, I had a word processor. Therefore, I was a writer. And this is many years ago. Now, if you go into the diary, you find out that Shirley Harrison says, my reply was a word processor just before to do the research. The plain fact of the matter, I was writing professionally for many, many years beforehand. I even lectured on creative writing. And what I do know an awful lot about writing, motivation. And if you write to writers, you'll understand exactly what I'm saying. Mannerisms when you're writing about characteristics. So I can talk about writing for hours and hours and hours on end. I enjoy writing. So I had this idea, through the big one mile, especially after Celebrity folded. I thought to myself, living in Garston at the time, 15 Lincoln Street. Then we moved up to Anne's wife, Anne's dad died. We only had about £600 in the bank. And I'm cutting a very long story short. Anne would say, we buy a house, we bought a house in 12 Golden Street. I was in a bit of financial debt. So I come out with a big one. I was really financially. I thought, right, I've got to pay this mortgage one way or the other. I've been a writer all my life. I can't work for Celebrity anymore because Celebrity's folded. I was doing a bit of work for Chapman. I was doing mainly, most of my work then was work for Looking Magazine, children's puzzles, word games, everything. We didn't pay quite well. I was getting paid about £100 a week, but it still wasn't enough to cover all the income of the mortgage. So come up with a big one. Go on, write that biggest story. And I looked at it as purely as a writer's point of view. Do something that everybody will believe. You tell a life that's big enough, everybody's going to believe it. And people, I've always worked on this philosophy, people believe what they want to believe. And that was the philosophy I worked on when I put on that diary. So I really was the philosophy when I worked on it. So if you tell a life big enough, you're going to get away with it. But I have to be very careful. I have to be careful. I've got the Victorian manuscript. I have to be careful about the ink. And I have to be careful with concepts. And I have to do that within 3 books. I'll give you the name of the 3 books. Murder, Mystery and Mayhem by Richard Whittaker Egan. The Poison Life of Florence Maybrick. That's the second book. And Colin Wilson and Robert O'Dell, The Diary of Jack the Ripper. They were the 3 main sources. Oh, there are a few other ones. Paul Harrison, what have you. In other words, I've studied every Ripper ownership and date of what we think of. But initialed there, ooh. Listen, I know that diary inside out and back to front. I know every mistake in it. I know every mistake in it. And there are a lot of mistakes. Very written mistakes in contents. I'll give you an example. When I done Mary Kelly and I said, no heart, no heart. I didn't mean literally Mary Kelly's heart was missing. I meant Maybrick was talking and he was saying, he had no heart. He had no heart. Meaning, he had no heart. He had no feeling. But they all took it the wrong way. And they all thought that Mary Kelly was looking on that part. They all thought that Mary Kelly, because her heart was missing and everything. But initially there would lead to the hearing mother. And I'm not clever, leaving them a very good clue. I left it there for all to see. Oh, blimey. I was anticipating all of you say. If you look at Stephen Knight, it was there previous. Stephen Knight, it was there previous. It was always there to see anyway. But it wasn't there to see when Mary Kelly was killed. It was there to see in the Stephen Knight booth. So you see, you can tell I know an awful lot about the diary of Jack the Ripper inside out and back to front. And so I know how the ink was done and everything else. But I repeat, I'm not going to give any of this, all of this. So it's going to be used on the internet and anything like that. And I'll get paid. So I'm only giving you snippets of information. But the snippets of information is what I believe are going to make you very interested. Then I will tell Alan Gray various other places for a couple of days in Liverpool. Show me. and I emphasize not doing that until I've got a contract.
Yes.
And I do emphasize until I've got a contract. Then I know you're genuine, and then you know I'm genuine. Right. But once I give you it, by God, you will get an international bestseller on the market. I guarantee it. The only thing saying is, and I've got to put the cards on the table, but don't hang, I can't see how I can get Nick, because for years now, I've been saying, I've wrote it, I've hoaxed it, but nobody believes me. So, I can't see, but it's a chance I have to take, but I hope to God I won't get Nick. Alan assures me that I won't. Alan assures me that I won't.
Well, well, Mike.
Right.
You've already told the police a written statement right. 2 years ago.
Yeah. So, as I say, these are all snippets. These are all snippets. Well, I can prove that there's a professional writer well beforehand, which I think is very important. And nobody ever had me down as a professional writer. Nobody ever had me down. Right. Even with Tidbits magazine. So you can always dig up all these articles and you go through all the things, everything. Done a few snippets for Daily Mirror, Sunday Mirror,
yes.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Anything to make money when I was writing.
You've got good background in the business.
I've got good friends.
Yes, I've got good background. And this, of course, is what they've all been trying to say you didn't.
Yeah, they're all saying I didn't.
They're just trying to say you're a useless joke.
Yeah.
Forget him, he's a joke.
Exactly.
Now,
when I did come out, I'm going to be honest, when I did come out with a statement with the Daily Post, I was telling the truth. The diary was a poetry. I made a mistake and I put my cards on the table. I was that pissed off with the excuse me language. I got thrown and done it. So because I got thrown, and I mean literally because I got drunk and done it, nobody believed me. So there you go. Then Shirley had me, Shirley Harrison had me down for having confabulation. And the whole point is, I've written letters to Shirley Harrison, I've told Corey Montgomery 1,000 times, that I wrote the diary. And Paul Bowman, right? And Anne wrote it. Nobody believes me. They're all saying, it's impossible. I couldn't have possibly wrote the diary. The plain fact of the matter, I did. And I can prove it. And that's the point. But money comes 50-50. You give me the 4,000, I get the contract, and we're in business. And I'll leave everything else for Alan Gray. Now, I think you've got a lot of information there.
Yes, now, the other thing, Mike, just before we close on this subject, I think you've laid it out pretty well, what you think, and I don't see it. I think it's very reasonable. Now, the other thing is, what Mr. Dangar can hope to see after when you receive this. You did mention the diary itself, where it was...
Yeah, the diary itself, I can't get hold of the actual diary itself. But that diary is actually with Robert Smith's house.
Yes.
Right. And he can't move that. I've got a document in Richard Balfion's office where he can't move that diary without my permission. But where the heck that diary is at the present moment in time, I presume he's got it in a bank vault, a bank safe, you know,
yeah.
And that's where it stays.
But where,
if he decides to move that diary
yes.
in any way, shape or form, I have got it legally where he can't move it without my permission. So yeah, I'm not saying, but if he does decide to move it, he's going to be breaking the law by moving it without my permission. That's legal.
Right. Well, that's a good point. Now, where it hailed from, where we got it from.
Yes.
Can we prove where we got it from?
If we go down, we spend a few days in Liverpool. Right?
Yeah.
Everybody missed a very important title clue. Like you missed the important title clue at the end. Especially you will. Oh, honestly, Mr. Dangar, you'll lap your head off when I tell you how it's online. You really will. It's so simple, it's on.
Yes. But where we bought the diary from,
where we got it from. I can't trace the man who actually got it.
Yes, but
that is impossibility. I was at one point considering, do you have a page in the Echo called the A-Team, right? And I was at one point considering writing to the A-Team and asking them, did you know such and such a thing? But then I thought, if they do that, somebody else might get onto the bandwagon. But that's how I've been trying to find out the man who originally sold it. I can't give you his name, but I know how I got it. And also, I don't forget, I know the diary, I know the back cover, the front cover, I know what was in the corner. I know what was in the corner of the diary. I know the ink. I know what the colouring is on the first page of the diary. I know how many pages were left.
I know all the mistakes in it.
I know all the mistakes.
Yes, well. And did you say then, did I understand you to say then, that you know the man who sold the diary?
No. I said,
you know,
no. I said, what I was thinking of doing is go through the A-Team.
Yeah,
trying to trace him that way. Right, but he should, I reckon, because of what was in the diary at the time, what was in the diary as I bought it, right, if we put an advertisement out in a Liverpool Echo, right, because it originated from Merseyside. Now, there's a fact I can tell you, it originated from Merseyside. If we put a large advertisement, which I'd consider doing, but I'm broke these days, and I haven't gotten in, of course, if I do that, I'm getting nowhere, because I'm not getting paid for anything. You know, we put that, I reckon we can put that, we can get that map with a bit of effort. And I did.
Yeah.
I reckon we can,
right.
Because I know what was in the diary.
Right.
So,
when you got that diary then, you didn't get it with the compass thing, did you?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. But you didn't get it in the manner you said?
Not in that diary by Rick Manor.
Through the auctioneers, not that direct manner.
No. Well, I'm not saying no more.
I don't want to say anything.
No, I'm going to repeat. I will tell you absolutely everything once I've got a contract. I'm not going to be any further than all that. Yeah.
Yet.
Well, you're going to have a hell of a lot of information.
And so we can substantiate the end. You feel to do something about where
Ian,
the diary was
Ian can easily be substantiated, but I can't substantiate the unless the... Oh, once I know, tell you the ingredients, once I tell you the ingredients, then you're going to have to get samples to prove. Do you understand what I mean? You're going to have to do it on paper.
And
you're going to find that the ingredients that I give you, the ingredients, that's all I'm saying,
yeah.
I give you, will match the exact ingredients of the paper, of the ink on the paper of the diary.
Yes.
Now, how can I do that if I didn't know?
Now, is there any other meaning thing you can think of? When you say,
we're going to contact,
when we run down Liverpool for 2 days, do you think that this will bring us substantial evidence?
It brings us one major piece of evidence.
A major piece of evidence
will bring you one major piece of evidence.
And
possibly a little bit more support and evidence, right?
Possibly.
Yeah. But I can't guarantee the possibly,
yes,
as yet, until I make the contact.
The fact is,
no, until I make the contact with those appropriate people.
Do you see what I mean?
And I'm not willing to give that information out until I've got that contract.
Yes.
October 31st.
Right. Okay.
And the other thing, the whole object of going into Liverpool for 2 days, the whole object of going into Liverpool for 2 days to come away with one major piece of evidence.
Right.
That's the whole object.
All right.
I'm also saying,
yes,
with a bit of luck, there might be smaller pieces of evidence.
One thing's for sure,
once we go over to Spain, once we start doing all this and everything else, right, can easily be followed up in eventual course of time.
Yes, and the other thing is, Mike, when you sit down with that diary and start page by page, with the mistakes made by Anne when she was writing it,
easily,
at your dictation or when you gave her the processing to do, there will be probably another book on it.
Never forget how we sent a course of that.
Yes, and the other one from the book which you took, is that the one from that volume book, the one that Melvin's got?
Yeah, that's
I sent it there for safety when I thought we were going to get...
Apostrophe.
From English literature.
No.
That was from them.
Apostrophe.
No. Right. You added it.
No, I did this when I was dictating it.
Yeah.
I made the mistake.
Oh, I see.
I said leave it in.
Yeah. Now, there's other occasions, just to support me again, and what I've told Mr. Dangar, when you said to Anne, she said, oh, I've made a mistake, and you said, well, put a gloss on it. And you pointed that word out to me, you remember?
I told you also.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So,
what
you're about to say,
I
understand that. Yeah. Now, you're ready to go back this all the way to the biography.
Yes.
And this.
Yes. Contract.
Yeah. And Mr. Dangle looking after all your affairs.
Yes.
Okay.
Contract this.
Which of course will be on contract.
Yeah.
Because believe me, he knows about contracts.
Yeah.
From what I know of Mr. Dangar, I've shook hands with him and said I'll do what I can, and I trust him and he trusts me at this stage, you know. So we'll get cracking, eh? I will now report back to Mr. Dangar this evening, and he may even want this tape dispatched into him so that he can listen to it and then he can make his move.
In the meantime,
we might hear something more from America.
Right.
Mr. Dangar suggests American lawyers are a lot more professional and cheaper even and more reasonable than British lawyers for this business,
Throwing
things up and all that. And these people in America, he got the most tremendous support last night. He told me this morning that in the end he'd have to switch his internet off because messages were still flying.
And there was only one of the messages. I hope you realise this. That once I tell all this and all the truth, right, the actual diary of Jack the Ripper, meaning the publishing agreements, the publishing agreement, is non-existent for me. So I'm not making any money anymore ever from the diary of Jack the Ripper. You know, Dorian Montgomery will come at me like a ton of bricks.
Yes.
Paul Bond will come at me like a ton of bricks. Jenny Harrison will come at me like a ton of bricks. And so so we'll have you ready.
Put it this way, let me just say,
problem at me,
like it's on a brick.
Doctor, that's why I want a contract.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm not
going to
sit around no money.
And what was the last payout? How did he get you that on last?
Shelly Horse took the last payout was £10,000 and got £5,000 or £5,200, right? I ended up with just under, £1,000, which I had to pay my solicitor's bills. The other £4,000 went to Shelly Horse, and I've got all these documents to prove this.
There you are.
So that's a great payout for somebody who started this and did it all.
Yeah.
Because Shirley Harrison had probably said, you've done the lot.
Yeah.
Well, now, you know, Mr. Dangar knows of Shirley Harrison.
Yeah.
I've thought about them. And I've told him exactly what your thinking was on Mr. Feldman.
Yeah.
You know, the different things he's into, pornography, and he is, isn't he? And all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Actually, I told Jackie's here, some of the things I hate.
I have even heard Paul Feldman swearing that you were on the telephone.
Yeah.
All right, I'm threatening Jim.
He's threatened me.
And did I
have my house beaten up? I've had my house done. I've had my telephone wires cut.
Did I have to be a bodyguard to back you up?
True. I've had my telephone wires
cut. Then we were waiting for him.
Yeah.
Well, there you are. And we told the police
about the diary.
I've had a black belt press on Paul Feldman.
Yeah.
Mm.
I've gone on air and said that.
Nothing would surprise me anymore.
Yeah.
Can I ask you just one more question?
question before we round up. Thanks very much for all this time I've taken up, mate. Helen Rutherford, have you ever heard of her?
Only what you said on Saturday, and I said when you said 24 will be said, yes. I've heard of her. That's the only time I've had it to name
it. But the first time you heard of her was
when you called me on Saturday.
And the first time you've heard of anything suspicious over Roberts is that.
It's this week, you?
Yeah, okay, man. Yeah. But you're not surprised. Anything. Not surprised, at least, couldn't it?
Not surprised, yeah.
Not surprised, yeah.
No, it's after River. Nothing anymore.
Well, Albert Johnson knows nothing, so I don't know. I'd be worried if it was my brother, I'd be saying and asking questions.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. Well, there's one other thing. If this all goes ahead and they do get the contract and everything else,
yeah.
Fine. But obviously, I've only asked her one question. At the moment, this is all between Alan Gray, yourself, and myself.
Yes.
I certainly don't want Robert Smith, Bernie Montgomery, Shirley Harrison, or Paul Bowman, and especially Paul Bowman, to know what we're doing.
Yes.
So, all right.
And that's what I'm adding at all.
Yes.
Right. I have added.
So, we've had quite a long session here, Mike, and we're going to sign off now. So, it's Michael Barrett on this tape that I've just interviewed, as you know, of course, and Alan Gray. And the time now is nearly 1:24 p.m. on the 30th of June, 1996.